During the past weeks, we have had many inspiring interviews with Amita Dee and the treasures she had shared with us of Mother's grace and teaching. Today, we have the honor, the blessing really, to have with us Amita Dee, who will read passages from Sri Aurobindo's poetry, especially Savitri. Amita Dee was taught diction and the correct methods of reciting poetry in French and English by the mother. And the mother chose her to be Savitri in their stage presentations. Amita Dee, welcome tonight. What will you read for us first?
Actually, Mother came to tell me that Sri Aurobindo had chosen me for the role in 1949. And her exact sentence in French was, "Il t'a lui-même décerné pour ce rôle." He has himself chosen you for this role.
And you said she came to you as she never had. Could you tell me that?
Yes, I think it was very unexpected for her also. You know, she used to see me upstairs and in the corridor. When she turned, I felt that her whole outer coat, which she used to wear over a gown, was absolutely a coat of light, you know. It was so extraordinary when she turned and said, "Ari," and then she said, "Il t'a lui-même décerné pour ce rôle." Many people have worked on this epic poem, and we actually are very grateful for all the explanations Mother has given to Huta Ben, and she has done paintings, and many of her paintings really correspond to some visions that Mother herself had. I shall begin with a few letters of Sri Aurobindo on Savitri, which give us a pointer to what we can grasp, if we can grasp, what we can receive from the poem. The first letter I shall read is this one, a very short one. Savitri is represented in the poem as an incarnation of the Divine Mother. This incarnation is supposed to have taken place in far past times when the whole thing had to be opened so as to hew the ways of immortality. We all know far past times, it was the hour before the gods awake, across the path of the divine event, the huge foreboding mind of night, alone in her temple of eternity, lay stretched, immobile, upon silence's margin. The letter. Savitri was originally written many years ago before the mother came and Sri Aurobindo Ashram was established in 1926. Originally written as a narrative poem in two parts, part one, Earth, and part two, Beyond, these two parts are still extant in the scheme, each of four books, or rather part two, consisted of three books and an epilogue. 12 books is an epic is a classical superstition, but the new Savitri may extend to 10 books. If much is added in the final revision, it may even be 12. The first book has been lengthening and lengthening out. As for the second part, I have not touched it yet. There was no climbing of planes there in the first version. Rather, Savitri moved through the worlds of night, of twilight, of day, all of course in a spiritual sense, and ended by calling down the power of the highest worlds of Sachidananda. I had no idea of what the supramental world would be like at that time, so I could not enter into the scheme. As for expressing the supramental inspiration, that is a matter of the future. This was written in 1936. What is the other one I had chosen? My children three. I think that should be enough for letters, no? For today's reading, I have chosen a passage from Book 2, Canto 5 to start with, where Sri Aurobindo is describing the creation. In a matrix of disintegrating force, by spending it conserved an endless sum. On the hearth of space, it kindled a viewless fire that, scattering worlds as one might scatter seeds, whirled out the luminous order of the stars. An ocean of electric energy formlessly formed its strange wave particles, constructing by their dance this solid scheme. Its mightiness in the atom shut to rest, masses were forged or feigned and visible shapes. Light flung the photon's swift revealing spark and showed in the minuteness of its flesh imaged this cosmos of apparent things. Thus has been made this real impossible world. An obvious miracle or convincing show, or so it seems to man's audacious mind, who seats his thought as the arbiter of truth, his personal vision as impersonal fact, as witnesses of an objective world, his erring sense and his instrument's artifice. Thus must he work life's tangible riddle out in a doubtful light, by error seize on truth, and slowly part the visage and the veil. But first, the spirit's ascent we must achieve. Out of the chasm from which our nature rose, the soul must soar sovereign above the form and climb to summits beyond mind's half sleep. Our hearts we must inform with heavenly strength, surprise the animal with the occult god. Then, kindling the gold tongue of sacrifice, calling the powers of a bright hemisphere, we shall shed the discredit of our mortal state, make the abysm a road for heaven's descent, acquaint our depths with the supernal ray, and cleave the darkness with the mystic fire. The next few passages describe Savitri herself. The first from Book 1, Canto 1. And Savitri too awoke among these tribes that hastened to join the brilliant summoner's chant, and lured by the beauty of the apparent ways, acclaimed their portion of ephemeral joy. Akin to the eternity whence she came, no part she took in this small happiness. A mighty stranger in the human field, the embodied guest within made no response. The call that wakes the leap of human mind, its checkered, eager motion of pursuit, its fluttering hued illusion of desire, visited her heart like a sweet alien note. Time's message of brief light was not for her. In her, there was the anguish of the gods, imprisoned in our transient human mold, the deathless conquered by the death of things. A prodigal of a rich divinity, herself and all she was, she had lent to men, hoping her greater being to implant and in their bodies' lives acclimatize, that heaven might native grow on mortal soil. All in her pointed to a nobler kind, near to earth's wideness, intimate with heaven, exalted and swift, her young, large vision spirit voyaging through worlds of splendor and of calm, overflew the ways of thought to unborn things. Ardent was her self-poised, unstumbling will, her mind a sea of white sincerity, passionate in flow, had not one turbid wave. As in a mystic and dynamic dance, a priestess of immaculate ecstasies, inspired and ruled from truth's revealing vault, moves in some prophet cavern of the gods, a heart of silence in the hands of joy, inhabited with rich creative beats, a body like a parable of dawn that seemed a niche for veiled divinity, or golden temple door to things beyond. Immortal rhythms swayed in her time-born steps. Her look, her smile awoke celestial sense. Even in earth's stuff and their intense delight poured a supernal beauty on men's lives. A wide self-giving was a native act, a magnanimity as of sea or sky, enveloped with its greatness all that came and gave a sense as of a greatened world. Her kindly care was a sweet, temperate sun. Her high passion, a blue heaven's equipoise. As might a soul fly like a hunted bird, escaping with tired wings from a world of storms and a quiet reach like a remembered breast, in a haven of safety and splendid soft repose, one could drink life back in streams of honey fire, recover the lost habit of happiness, feel her bright nature's glorious ambience, and preen joy in her warmth and colors rule. A deep of compassion, a hushed sanctuary, her inward help unbarred a gate in heaven. Love in her was wider than the universe. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart. The great unsatisfied Godhead here could dwell. The great unsatisfied Godhead here could dwell, vacant of the dwarf self's imprisoned air. Her mood could harbor his sublime breath, spiritual, that can make all things divine. A deep of compassion, a hushed sanctuary, her inward help unbarred a gate in heaven. Love in her was wider than the universe. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart. The great unsatisfied Godhead here could dwell, vacant of the dwarf self's imprisoned air. Her mood would harbor his sublimer breath, spiritual, that can make all things divine. For even her gulfs were secrecies of light. At once she was the stillness and the word, a continent of self-diffusing peace, an ocean of untrembling virgin fire, the strength the silence of the gods were hers. In her, he found a vastness like his own. His high, warm, subtle ether he refound, and moved in her as in his natural home. In her, he met his own eternity. The passages that I shall read now were recited in front of the mother on the annual day of our school, and the first one was done in 1949. From Book 10, Canto 3, the selection was made by Omruto Da, to whom even when he was a little boy, young boy, and had come for the first time around, it seems Sri Aurobindo used to read out poems. And he had read out lines from Savitri to Amrutoda. And these lines were chosen by him from Book 10, Canto 3, The Debate Between Love and Death.
These lines were chosen by Sri Aurobindo.
No, the selection was done by Amrita.
But Sri Aurobindo approved?
Approved of them. He read them out to him and Sri Aurobindo approved of it. We shall do only one dialogue, one speech of death and the answer. This is when Savitri goes and meets death face to face and asks for Satyavan to return back to earth with her. Death answered her, "Return and try thy soul. Soon shalt thou find appeased that other men on lavish earth have beauty, strength, and truth. And when thou hast half forgotten, one of these shall wind himself around thy heart that needs some human answering heart against thy breast. For who, being mortal, can dwell glad alone? Then Satyavan shall glide into the past, a gentle memory pushed away from thee. By new love and thy children's tender hands, till thou shalt wonder if thou lovedst at all. Such is the life Earth's travail has conceived, a constant stream that never is the same." But Savitri replied to mighty death, "O dark, ironic critic of God's work, thou mock'st the mind and body's faltering search for what the heart holds in a prophet hour, and the immortal spirit shall make its own. Mine is a heart that worshipped, though forsaken, the image of the God its love adored. I have burned in flame to travel in his steps. Are we not they who bore vast solitude, seated upon the hills, alone with God? Why dost thou vainly strive with me, O death? a mind delivered from all twilight thoughts, to whom the secrets of the gods are plain. For now at last I know, beyond all doubt, the great stars burn with my unceasing fire, and life and death are both its fuel made. Life only was my blind attempt to love. Earth saw my struggle, heaven my victory. All shall be seized, transcended, they shall kiss, casting their veils before the marriage fire, the eternal bridegroom and eternal bride. The heavens accept our broken flights at last. On our life's prow that breaks the waves of time, no signal light of hope has gleamed in vain.